hope you had a great discussion. We're back with the panel, and we have your questions. Thank you. back with the panel, I want to excuse Dina Powell. She had to step out because she did have a hard commitment, and she sends her best and apologizes. Back with the panel, and Peter, I wanted to kick it off with you because one of the issues, of course, is education, as we've been talking about, but some people don't have the access to education. Tell us about your business education certificate, which is so valuable and helpful. Tell our audience about that.
Okay. First of all, not everybody will have the opportunity of going to a university. And on my program, we actually have quite a lot of people, especially women, that do not have proper university degree coming for the program. And what we try to do is to break the pedagogy down to a level where anybody that went to a high school can actually assimilate it. So it's more of an experiential type of learning than the real cracking of numbers and all that. And we also make it's a 5 months program, but basically, effectively, it's about 30 days. So what the women and the men, of course, get to do is to come to class for like 6 days in a month. So the pressure of reading and all that is not a lot on them. So they get to learn in class, but they learn to practice a lot outside. So it's a mixture of learning and practicing.
And the cost of this access?
Wow. It is expensive. And what we are now able to do is that through a project like that of Goldman Sachs, and indeed the local sponsors within Nigeria, are now able to make this access, achievable for these people. It's expensive, yeah.
It's a really great idea. Let's get to some of the questions that came out of the table talking. If there were one thing you could ask donors in the room to contribute in order to improve the effectiveness of your program, what would you specifically ask for? And how would you use a contribution of $100,000 if you actually got it?
I'm going to answer it in a very, very different manner, if I may be allowed to.
Okay.
I'm the smallest bank in the industry. And the dream is, it's the only commercial bank and a developmental financial institution in the world. I believe last time such an initiative was taken by an American. It was the first women bank in Tennessee. So I would love to, where you're saying I don't need $100,000 that you talked about. I'm going to be talking about $100 million to raise the paid-up capital, Basel II compliance. So I'm going, because I tend to associate myself. I have all the problems as a women's bank as a women do. The only difference is I've moved from a micro level to an SME level because we have the commitment and we have the passion and we make good money. So I'm going to answer it in a very different manner.
For me, what I'm going to ask for is to say, how can we, after we have finished developing these people, how can we connect them to the very little funding that they require? Typically, between 50,000 and 100,000, each of them. And the multiplier effect of that funding after the business and management education is phenomenal. And that's what I'll be asking for. If I'm Oliver Twist, I will ask for something smaller, a little bit more. And I will say, how can I be helped to be able to replicate myself and my institution across Nigeria, across Africa, across developing countries, so that more people will have access and will lower the cost of what today is still very expensive for people?
Now, I'm going to give you a good answer to that, a guarantee fund. A guarantee fund that guarantees women business where other banks is concerned. That is what women need. And that is something that I would like to, because it's something that I've talked to the donors about. We're also in the process of negotiating with the U.S. firm. And that is where I talked about where the policymakers and the regulator is concerned, because the prudentials, for example, allow me to give clean financing to a certain extent. And what I would really ask is if a guarantee fund to guarantee women business can be set up. That is the new initiative that the donors need to take.
What I would ask is cell phones with open airtime for the woman, because one of the things that they really need to be able to do is connect to markets, find out where the prices would be good, be able to connect with suppliers in a more convenient way. Some other vehicle which would be really fuel efficient, because in rural areas, transport costs really stifle women, well, any type of entrepreneurship, because you've got to get your products out. And then possibly money to go into research for a time machine, because women entrepreneurs not only have the businesses they're running, but they're also obviously looking after families and feeding kids and so on. So just a way to help them, you know, be more efficient, concentrate their time and things like that. And then I would say, I've put down a list of five things. I mentioned it at a table here. I use a term called reciprocal visits, where you help one woman and she's got her business going, or one group of women and they've got their business going, and others start up. They experience the same type of problems. And if you can just give them the funding to be able to visit each other, if one's got a tax problem, you just say to them, you know, instead of them constantly coming to you as a mentor and saying, how can you solve my problem? You say, well, why don't you go to that lady? She had the same problem 2 weeks ago. Or go and visit that one. They had a design problem. They're really good with design. So funding for them to be able to visit each other. And then also there's really powerful, there are always, you will find them, powerful business people or business people, successful business people within villages, within small towns and so on. But they're also busy people. So if you can have a little bit of an incentive scheme for them to come and give of their time, you know, just paying them for their transport costs or a little hourly rate or whatever the case may be, just to serve as mentors when called upon. So that would be five things you could do with $100,000, I think.
And what do you think the donors need to understand about your business, about operating, that they may not know?
The thing is, somebody mentioned the word venture capital just now, and I think, and what's the tolerance for failure? I like that concept. And I think the tolerance for failure should be high. Small and medium enterprises don't, I mean, the failure rate is really high. If you make 3 years, you know, then you're really doing a good job. So I think venture capitalists mustn't always expect return on investment in hard cash. What they should be looking for a return on investment is training achieved, a new level of understanding achieved by this woman, those 20 people standing behind that single woman, how are those people being assisted, and just a general increase in self-confidence and empowerment. That is phenomenal, because we were talking about this tolerance for failure, and women in the areas where I work, They don't tolerate failure for themselves. I mean, if it doesn't work with poultry, tomorrow they're doing vegetables, because they've got people to feed. So it's not as if they can afford to go back and go to the husband and say, oh, it didn't work out for me, what must I do now? And
Right.
A month later they do something. So I think donors need to understand that in the field of entrepreneurship, there could be a high rate of failure, but you should not be measuring it in the hard cash.
Peter?
One of the greatest eye-opener for me was when a high-power delegation from Goldman Sachs in New York, in London, in Chicago, all came to Lagos. And they met with these women that are ordinary women, very creative, and have gone through 6 to 8 weeks of business and management education. And their horizon and their thinking changed. It was very interesting to me, and I'll use an example of one of them who never went to college. And she started by selling bean cake, which typically it's at the micro level. But today, she's now a full-fledged catering business owner. And she stood there so elegantly, and now, after 8 weeks of management education, she could actually do her pricing correctly. She could package for a bid on the laptop and make presentation on the laptop. Now, that changed the way she thought about herself, her business, and the confidence level. And I stood with her husband just like 100 yards back. And the husband was looking at his wife, and he was shedding tears. And I asked him, I said, why? Are you not happy? He said, no, I am overjoyed. Because I never could imagine that in 8 weeks, my wife could be transformed like this.
That's wonderful. And one of the questions on the list is a sort of a transition from that. As you improve the plight of women, how can we support, encourage, and enlighten men to accept women in their new role?
Now, this is a very big challenge. Again, coming from the context of an African man. But luckily for us, we also have solutions. I mean, by all standard, a lot of people, you know, look up to me, but my wife, I believe, is even more successful than me. And the interesting thing is that I use my wife as an example. She's into ladies' fashion and is extremely successful. And I said, I am not threatened. On the contrary, the reason why I am happy is because she's not a burden to me. And I bring her on some of the programs to actually talk to the women. And right now, she's mentoring virtually like 50 women at the same time. So, and then the men also listen because they can see life example of the benefit of the two parties actually being successful in whatever they do.
Zarina Aziz, Peter Bemkol, and Marita Rutz, and our thanks to Dina Powell as well. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody.
Let me just mention a couple of things coming from the tables. One of the issues that came up was, can we start early? And, of course, we had a commitment on this earlier. Can you start with the financial education for women at an earlier time as opposed to waiting to their women? There were a lot of comments about, and that's why I'm glad Benke spoke, there were a lot of comments about how do you create that transition from high school to doing something? Is it a career academy, et cetera? And I think, so I'm glad he spoke about the fact that even in, you know, 8 weeks, we've seen some 3-4 months that that really can be transformative. And we do have, Goldman Sachs does have one of their main partnerships is with CAMFED in Zambia, where it is right for young women who are just leaving high school. So I think that is a very important model, and that came up in lots of the table conversations. There were a lot of comments that came up that had the version of women role playing, you know, how to deal with men in these contexts. I mean, this has been interesting for me too. We were at a conference together recently in Kenya, and I sat there with a woman who was in a fairly powerful position in a university at Tanzania, and they were talking about how you create the pool, and she said, well, you know, there's another problem. She goes, the universities are so all male, we can't get the women to apply. They don't want to go through that. And she has to basically kind of tell them how it's okay. You know, she's like she's the vice chancellor. Here's what she does. Here's how she gets through. But, I mean, but this issue of the role playing, the leadership skills, you know, sometimes leadership courses, et cetera, in the United States, they can be very uneven or fluffy, but you really saw the power of those type of things. And the last thing I just mentioned is I was with Benke and I were at something, and the mentoring, and I'll be honest, the idea of whether somebody in a U.S. financial institution or, you know, can be an actual mentor to somebody in a small business in Nigeria or Zambia seemed a little, you know, I wasn't sure what it would be like. But there was a woman from Zambia who told such a wonderful story about her mentor at a financial institution in the U.S., and she just had a little magazine. And I guess the backspace of the magazine there, as here, was very, very popular. And so she sold it for several months at 80% of the cost. And somebody comes in and offers her 200% of what she was asking for the backspace. But she's already promised somebody. And she says, you know, I'm just alone. You know, what's the ethics here? Can I break my word? This is so much money. What do I do? And so she describes going over the internet and phone with somebody, you know, at Goldman Sachs doing this, saying, okay, here's what you do first. Do this. find out how much this is worth, then call me back. And they went through and they negotiated how she ended up giving them some free space in the internet part, which made them happy. They gave up the backspace. She got the 200% for the backspace. And it was just absolutely just a lovely story of an actual mentoring between Zambia and high finance in New York. So, I mean, it really is powerful to actually see some of these things happen. We're going to end today with, first I just wanted to do what we call a shout out to Fred Zwanaker, who is the founder and CEO of the African Leadership Academy. Are you there? Here. There you are. And he is, they have just opened its doors a couple of weeks ago to its first class of 100. They received applicants from 36 countries, and their commitment is to expand this program by providing 100 scholarships to disadvantaged youth, enabling them to take part in leadership, entrepreneurship, and African studies secondary education program, which is very much consistent with what we've had. And, I will, then our last thing before we end for the day is that Martine Burt, the executive director of Fondation, God, I'm going to screw this up so much, aren't I? He is the founder and current CEO of Fondation in Paraguay, a nonprofit organization devoted to the promotion of entrepreneurship among the world's poor in order to create jobs and family incomes. In 2004, he received the Microfinance Award for Excellence in Social Responsibility and Outstanding Social Entrepreneurship Award from the Schwab Foundation. Is he here? Yes. This is what we'd like to do is for him just to do a short, as we said, our new innovation, a progress report on a past commitment, and just quickly let us know how that has been going.
Hello, I'm going to be very short because everybody wants to leave, but this is really a misnomer when they say Clinton Global Initiative. More than an initiative, I think it is a great challenge. And I'd like to share with you how I was challenged. I come from Paraguay, and we are developing a program for to teach the poorest of the poorest in the most disadvantaged rural areas how to switch from being peasants to entrepreneurs for free through a process of education that pays for itself. So we are concentrating on 100% employability through a curriculum that is 100% market-based, and the school generates 100% of all its budget through learning by doing educational projects. So the poultry class provides the kids with education on how to raise chicken, but also how to sell chicken, and the profit from the poultry class pays for the professor. So we have performance-based salaries. The name of this session is Beyond Microfinance. What did Acción International, BRAC, Grameen Bank teach us? It taught us that you can give a loan to the poorest of the poor, you can charge them an expensive interest, and you can get your money back. That was a discovery, because before that, it was considered to be impossible. Through that, the microfinance industry grew. What can we learn from microfinance? That you can resolve the two main issues of development, which is access to credit, access to water, access to education, access to housing. And you can charge the poor the real costs, and if it is a quality product, they will pay for it. And quality means that it's going to be useful to them and that it will be packaged in a way that the poor can reel. The bottom of the pyramid business is the cell phone. Access and quality to communications. The reason why the poor have access to cell phones is because you can buy talking minutes. That is what allows. So basically our Clinton Global Challenge is to take this model of education that pays for itself to 50 countries in the next 10 years. And now we're concentrating on all-girls schools to show that you can take 15-year-old, very poor rural girls, transform them into rural entrepreneurs through their learning by doing and earning and promoting entrepreneurship as a way of life, not only to make money, but to empower women and to change our society. So I want to thank the Clinton Global Initiative and congratulate you for your magnificent panel.
Thank you. The only 2 years we've had education, Michelle Jolin at this table has been one of our deputies. Michelle is a former Ashoka person. So if you want to know, like, the insides of getting up here, be a very successful Ashoka fellow. And then Michelle is a pipeline and very much let us know about the great work there. I just wanted to make a pitch, as tired as we all are, about tomorrow morning. And I will acknowledge that tomorrow morning we'll have a little bit more, but not totally, of a U.S. focus. But we have a special breakfast before our last formal panel will be tomorrow at 10:45. That will be on education and the struggle for stability. We'll have Zainab Salbi from Women for Women International, who, by the way, is the daughter of Saddam Hussein's pilot. So there's an interesting life for you. And her program and her work in Iraq and elsewhere, a conflict. Christina Thorpe from Sierra Leone. And then Wycliffe Jean from Haiti. George Stephanopoulos will be moderating. At 7:45 to 9, we have another breakfast. And this is going to be an organized discussion. We're not going to do the theme, but it starts at 7:45. We'd love people to get there and get breakfast because we really do have a program. We're just going to have people speak. We're going to take Q&A probably a little bit more the old-fashioned way there. But I just want to tell you, speaking, Roland Fryer, many of you might have read the New York Times Magazine story on him a couple of years ago, very innovative African-American economist at Harvard, who has, with the support of Eli Broad, now been put ahead of the new Harvard Education Laboratory, the idea basically to create an NIH for education in urban schools. And they're going to be talking about that new initiative and the idea of bringing that kind of testing and innovation and experimentation in a rigorous way and having a research center like that. We're also going to have the founder of the KIPP schools, David Levin, and KIPP schools are much loved and slightly controversial, but it is will be a very, very interesting opportunity to hear him talk. I know many of you have seen him on 60 Minutes. And then John Schnur, who does New Leaders for New Schools, which is the NGO that really focuses on training amazing principals to go into our toughest urban areas and do high performance. And what's interesting here is that he's now partnered with World Fund and others, et cetera, to expand this model worldwide. Again, something that just came out of conversation at tables like this last year. So it will be a little bit more of a U.S. focus than normal, but not completely. And we'll have a chance to have a discussion. So if you can pull yourself out and grab your breakfast quick, it won't be as long a day on the later side. So thank you. I know Thursdays is a tough day, and you know, as always, we start out with two presidential candidates in the morning, the normal. So it's been a long day, exciting day. I appreciate everybody being here. I appreciate our amazing panelists. I really, really do appreciate the fact that Maria showed up. She had every reason, and I imagine a lot of pressure to be back at CNBC today. And you know, there is something in to keeping commitments and your word, and we really, really appreciate Maria being there. And again, if you crop me out of the picture, it's okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. Would our table facilitators please meet with Paige at the back of the room for debriefing? Table facilitators, meet with Paige for your daily debriefing.